At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. It's me, Jody, and today I'm bringing you the best and worst moments from Jersey Shore, Little People Big World, Teen Mom OG Reunion Part 2, and Married at First Sight. I'm actually recording this first part of the episode early because I'm going to be spending a few days out of the house downtown Chicago, but I didn't want to miss anything with you, and there's a lot happening this week in reality TV. Now let's get some business out of the way. If you love snark and gossip, documentaries, and more show recaps like Real Housewives of New York, join me over on patreon.com/realitytvpod and sign up to become a member. You'll get exclusive content and access to all previous episodes. And if I ever get the chance to post a podcast earlier in the week like I did last week on Wednesday night, I will post them on Patreon first so you don't have to wait until Friday morning to get them. Also, join all the other Claremont Apples on Facebook. Find the link in the show notes or just search Reality TV Podcast on Facebook. And as always, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Reality TV Pod. All right, let's get crazy, get wild, and start with Jersey Shore, bitch. This episode was titled Ron Ron Juice. And man, the juice, or if you want to call it the tea, it is going to be spilled on Ron soon because the stuff he was getting down into this week, not good for a soon-to-be dad. Now, the episode starts with Jenny and Nicole yelling at each other about Jenny sticking up for Vinny. If you remember from last week, Nicole was all upset that Vinny was breathing the same oxygen as her because she's a married woman. I said it last week, it's just so overhyped. Nicole was the only one making a big deal out of it, which was just calling more attention to it. Pauly is just the best. He definitely likes the ladies, but he can be such a good guy. When he came up with that glass of wine with ice cubes, I don't know why that killed me, but it did, but he was pulling this, I don't want to say Oprah, it was like an Ayanla. You know, I love my analogies to Oprah and Ayanla. But I mean, how can you not love this guy? He's trying to be the peacemaker. And he worked his magic. The two girls make up and all is happy again. Nicole and Vinny even make up and they have a little bonding moment in the jacuzzi. A different kind of bonding. Take it easy, Gianni. Fast forward to the next day. GTL. Yes. Now, Dina isn't going GTL because she's just enjoying life, soaking in all the skin cancer while she can before her health insurance, paid for by MTV, is still active. Mike and Jenny are driving together, and they get into this conversation in the car, which it really got to me. I loved Mike way back when at the very start of Jersey Shore, and then I hated him. I think we all did around that Italy season, and now I'm back to loving him again. They're talking about this plea deal that Mike is taking, that one of the brothers took, and Mike just ends up opening up about what's going on within his family. Now, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but there was something about one or both brothers being the ones who managed his money, and maybe they stole from him. I think Mike's defense right now in this whole tax evasion thing is that he didn't know he was not paying his taxes because his brother was acting as his money manager and he was responsible for paying it. Now, I don't know for sure. I'd have to look it up, but I know that he mentioned his brother, Frank, and that they don't talk anymore. He's tried to sell some stories on Mike. I do know that Frank came out of the closet during that season of Family Boot Camp. I think it was just back in 2017. Well, since then, Frank has changed his name to think it's Maximo or Massimo. It's got to be Maximo. But it's a whole mess. I don't know what that mom must be thinking, Mother Sorrentino, but I feel for her, but it's not what we watch this show for, right? So let's just talk about the funny stuff. So they're all busting their asses at the gym, except for Mike, who is on that treadmill eating looks like either a Pop-Tart or a Nutrigrain bar. And God damn it, I was loving it. He's just unapologetic walking on the treadmill, mind you. He's not running, walking while having a snack. Multitasking and living your best life. It was just as endearing as seeing a senior at the gym this morning gently cycling while she was wearing a turtleneck sweater and corduroy pants. I mean, they call them the golden years for a reason. Oh, but that's not the only thing Mike was doing. He then turns around and starts walking backwards on the treadmill, still snacking, but now walking backwards. Now, I know this is a thing people do, but it's also a thing crazy people do. True story. About 15 years ago, my mom was at the gym at our local community college, and she saw some guy wearing a helmet walking backwards on the treadmill. So she thought it would be a great idea to ask him what he was doing, and he told her, oh, you walk backwards, like walk with me backwards. And because my mom is my mom, and she is the cutest, most give no F's woman on this planet, she did it. And when the man left a few minutes later, a trainer came over and told my mom, like, don't listen to the guy. There's nothing to be gained here except a hospital bill. You're going to fly off this thing straight into the cinder block wall in front of you. Absolute true story, which is why we all need a Mother Carol in our lives. Okay, well, let's get to some Ron Ron juice. All the roommates are talking about Sam, and as much as I think Sam is crazy, I believe Ron when he says that Sam didn't give a shit about any of the other roommates because she didn't talk to any of them unless they were broken up. Sam just sucks. Mike's wardrobe also sucks, though. That denim vest, hilarious. Everyone is telling him that he looks like Nick Lachey, straight out of the 90s. Snooki's face when she turned that corner and saw him wearing it killed me. I didn't even know that they made men's denim vests ever. I guess if there is a tacky trend to be had, it would start and end with someone from the Jersey Shore. Now, at the club, those two girls, who would be so stupid? Why would you want to even keep hanging around in front of cameras when everyone on the cast is telling you consistently, go, you're annoying. Girls, you're not going to look good on TV. Move it along. I think they deserve to be embarrassed on TV because they were choosing to act like idiots. Even when this show originally aired, I was always thinking of these girls' parents because, I mean, now that I'm an older person, I just think, God, their parents have got to be mortified. How do you go to your neighborhood block party and explain that one to your neighbor named Chuck and Laverne, right? I mean, there's no going back from that. Way to ruin the reputation for your family. Now no one's going to hold them on the high pedestal they had them on for making the best chili. Now, do you think they have block parties in France or Sweden where those girls they took back to their house are from? Ew. Ronnie is so messy and such an asshole. Now, Paulie, I think he can do whatever he wants because not only is he single, but this is his job to be in the club. It's his brand. It's his image. But Ronnie, dude, you got a new girlfriend and she's pregnant. Vinny will probably get some shit from his girlfriend too, but he wasn't touching. So to me, that's a little different. Now, Nicole was cracking me up. She's pouring orange juice and vodka into those wine glasses, like my kids would do. She's not a mixologist, that is for sure. She was serving up 100% alcohol cocktails. It was like one cup of vodka per 2 tablespoons of orange juice. And that one chick was thirsty, literally and figuratively. She wanted to jump on any of them. To me, she kind of looked like Carini from Before the 90 Days, but man, it was the beginning of the end for that girl. Now, we've all seen that girl. Hopefully, you haven't been that girl, but she had her eyes on Pauly, trying to not so subtly make the moves on him by being the skankiest girl in the jacuzzi. But when Pauly started making out with the one Swedish girl, Thirsty gets out, and Snooki realizes, oops, I may have just given this girl alcohol poisoning. The girl starts throwing up all over the couch, inside, the wall, the drapes, and Pauly and Snooki are like, you okay over there? Don't move. But this chick is a mess. But even more so of a mess is the couch and the walls and everything within the 4 feet of splash zone. There's no doubt they're going to have to throw out that couch. They're going to have to repaint. I mean, you can't just wash that off. There's no salvaging that shit. I mean, between that whole biohazard and Ronnie's plumbing issues, the place just needs to be burned down immediately. Ron may want to just stage his own death in this fire because he starts moving in on Sweden and takes her for a tour, which we all know is a code word for take me to your room. But they don't go into Ron's room because there are not any doors on the rooms because this is Jersey Shore. So Ron goes into the bathroom with this chick, and I'm going to say Ron received something in that bathroom, you know, so he can tell his girlfriend he technically didn't cheat. What a gentleman. All right, moving on, and this is by popular request. I didn't realize how popular it was going to be, but I'm going to talk about a little show, pun intended, called Little People, Big World. But disclaimer, I only have so much in me, and really the only part of this show that's worth snarking on to me is the person who makes us cringe the most, and that is Audge. So I watched the latest episode that was up on my On Demand. It was something about butterflies, and I zeroed in on the scenes of Zach and Tori and Jer and Audge. Last week, I missed something about a birthday party and Tori being afraid of the dark. Zach was at the World Dwarf Games. I don't know. But Zach doesn't want to empty the diaper genie right away in this episode. And boy, I remember those days. It's a smell you never forget. And by the time you have your second baby, those of you who are on your first, forget the diaper genie. You just chuck those things in the regular garbage. Don't waste your money. If you're pregnant, going to be pregnant, forget the diaper genie. Just throw that shit in your garbage and bring it out to the street when it needs emptying. But baby registry tips aside, we're here to snark on Audge and Jeremy. Within 8 seconds into their scene of packing their damn hospital bag, I was furiously taking notes. Jeremy saying packing the bag was, quote, a whole to-do. Fuck off, Jeremy. He is just as bad as Audge now. Packing a bag is a to-do? How lazy have you been all your life? If watching your wife parade all her freebies that Etsy shop owners have sent her to shill on her Instagram is a big to-do for you, the next thing on your to-do list should be to get a real job. So Audge is packing this bag with all types of shabby, chic, organic diapers and 2 burp cloths. And she starts talking about how she's going to have this all-natural birth. So she's doing the best she can to prepare. Oh, all together now. Fuck off, Audge. Have whatever the hell kind of birth you want. Natural, epidural, C-section, whatever. But don't go bragging about it. Just do it. Don't be all sanctimonious about it. Now, what got me even angrier and snarkier than usual today is the fact that as I paused to write down all of these fucks and odges, I paused on a moment when the camera is showing what she's putting into her bag. Before me laid 3 battery-powered candles, a leather-bound journal, and some personalized Etsy pregnancy journal of hers. She wants to have candles at her birth, which I'm sure the hospital won't allow, so she has to do the battery ones. I get it, but it is so hypocritical for Odge to have these things when they pride themselves on being all eco and green and all natural. And then just the amount of stuff this chick is packing, it is unreal. There was about a 4-foot by 5-foot area on the floor that she's got covered in stacks and layers of things that she says that she needs with her. I thought I had too much stuff when I brought a regulation carry-on size pull-along suitcase to the hospital. And I mean, you guys, the hospital has everything you need. I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but if you haven't had a baby, trust me on this, do not follow this girl's suggestions. Now, on a completely opposite end of sincerity and being genuine on camera, Zach is talking to Amy about marriage and how he feels like he kind of needs to step it up and start putting more effort into paying attention to Tori. Amy really loves Tori, and you can tell because she tells Zach that, yeah, you know, you probably should do more. He needs to make her feel special more often. I would bet that if Jeremy were to check his hipster at the door and ask Amy for advice, she'd end up telling him the opposite. Crawl yourself out of the hole that is Audge's ass and wake up. The world does not revolve around AudgePodge.com. It's an actual thing. That's not just a saying. Okay, now when Zach and Tori go over to Jeremy and Audrey's house, you guys, these two. So their son Jackson is in Audrey and Jeremy's little version of a baby swing that they're going to be using for, okay, I'm going to spoil the name for you, Baby Ember, who don't tell anyone. But Jeremy says, well, we probably won't be putting her, meaning their baby, in there for a while. Like as if their precious baby isn't going to go into it as early as Zach and Tori's baby did. God forbid. They just plan on soothing her with lavender oil being diffused and ease her colic with infant massage and baby Pilates. Oh, and no worries because Jeremy isn't worried about losing sleep. New parents are just unprepared. He's got it handled. Now, I've always said I liked Zach better, but when I heard him say that Jeremy and Audrey have a different style, like I perked up. He agrees with us, you guys. His actual words were, they're probably going to be soaking things in lavender and lace. They're all oils and green and stuff. Now I know why Tori fell in love with this man. You've got to think that behind closed doors, Tori and Zach are just talking shit about those two just like we are. Especially when Audrey starts saying things like, this is verbatim, this is a transcript. My belly dropped, like, significantly. Like, my pubic bone is, like, really sore and tender. I don't sleep through the night. I think hormonally, like, your body is getting used to being up feeding and stuff, so... And not only that, if that isn't bad enough, she then starts lecturing Tori on giving birth naturally, how every woman she knows who had a natural birth, and she emphasizes that, has labored for days. And then when it's time to deliver, you're just so wiped and it's so hard. Well, the reason she's explaining this to Tori is because Tori just had a C-section, so she wouldn't understand. Tori is not stupid, though, because she kind of sort of vented to the cameras alone about Audrey, and she said, that's my one thing about her. She just wants it this one way. I mean, you just want a healthy baby. You don't want to have blinders on. I just love Tori. I get her. She's real. And I think she's really relatable, especially about that part about never going out after you have a baby. It's not a joke. I had a lot of issues actually with my daughter when she was a newborn. So the first time my husband and I were out alone was when she was 11 months old and I had to go to the hospital because I had a little scare. I was 33 weeks pregnant with my son and I felt like I was living again. It was our first date out in the triage labor and delivery. And I got to tell you, Tori and Zach are absolutely right. Every new parent that you listen to that says you got to go out, you do. Don't wait until you're pregnant again and in labor delivery like me to get out of the house. Whatever you do, just get out. Now, there weren't any more Audge and her moments this week, but the next episode I'm going to have to cover because there is some massive weeping willow square footage of shade thrown at the whole Roloff side of the family, specifically Amy, because she's going to be gone on a little trip around Tori's due date. And in the previews, Jeremy says, I wouldn't personally schedule a trip around this time, but, oh, you know, because everyone is supposed to be setting their clocks by Audge's cervix, as if they would even allow anyone to be in the hospital or around them anyway while she's in labor. And, you know, God forbid someone touch their precious baby without getting an essential oil bath beforehand. So, yeah, like I said, we're definitely going to be covering this next episode because there's going to be a lot to snark on. Now stay with me because coming up next, we got Teen Mom OG and Married at First Sight. Here it is, part two of the Teen Mom OG reunion. MTV promised us a lot last week, so how did they do? Well, we pick up where we left off with Ryan throwing a temper tantrum in the green room. The producers are doing their best to manipulate Ryan into thinking going out there with Macy is actually best for him, but he doesn't fall for it, and he refuses to even go on the same stage as her. But he will go out there if his mommy and daddy and Mackenzie are there with him. In other words, he needs to be surrounded by his enablers. So once on the stage right off the bat, I was pissed. Why are Jen and Larry the ones sitting next to Dr. Drew? Ryan is the teen parent, not Jen. So immediately, Larry starts answering for Ryan, which it's exactly why Ryan wanted everyone there. He knows they'll just spin the situation much better than he's able to, and then he can just sit there and not answer any questions about what he's doing on a daily basis to stay sober. He isn't going to any 12-step, he's not going to outpatient treatment, not even seeing a therapist, so yeah, well, this is where Ryan just stares right back at Dr. Drew and just blinks. So what about medication-assisted treatment, Ryan? Oh, well, Dr. Drew, yes, he can answer that one. Perfect. He has been doing that. He's on Suboxone. Now, Ryan actually goes to answer this one on his own, but he's got chewing in his mouth and he's swallowing that cancer spit and he's gurgling. I'll take that when I have a rough day or something because I don't want to go back to rehab for Suboxone. Dr. Drew nails him on this and says, see, that's why you don't want to take the urine test. Now, everyone except Ryan says, oh, no. He can take a urine test. No, that's not it. So I don't know enough about this Suboxone treatment, drug testing. So I had to look into it and, you know, I like some Google. So I dug in. Now, from my reading, depending on what type of urine drug analysis, drug test you're given, the Suboxone could show up as a type of opioid. Now, if misused, it itself can become addictive. Now, I wasn't sure at that point if that's what Dr. Drew was referring to, or was he saying Ryan could be using opioids and say the test was reading positive because of the Suboxone, but really he's still using. Well, at this point, it doesn't matter because Mackenzie just starts huffing and puffing and getting all pissy with Dr. Drew. Interesting to me how she doesn't show that side with Ryan. She's just the subservient little Pinteresty wifey poo when we see her. but to a doctor, a very experienced and respected doctor at that, Mackenzie says, "Excuse me?" And then I loved it because she looks at Ryan like, "Ryan, what are you going to do about this?" Yeah, Ryan's eyes are in the back of his head right now, so he's not going to be able to help you out here in this situation, Mac. Just listen to the man. Jen is still continuing to cover for Ryan, which is exactly the problem. This is what I think happens when they go home. If Jen or Larry were to say anything, even slightly negative or honest about Ryan, he puts some kind of guilt trip on them that they don't have his back, they don't love him, they've always judged him, something along those lines. So then, next time they're asked about it, Jen covers for him because she wants to make sure that Ryan thinks that she has his back. Now, I'm sure she tells him what she really thinks when they're home alone later. And then she says, "I love you so much and that I'll always be on your side, but you have to promise to do better next time because I won't keep doing this." But then they do. In this cycle of enabling and codependence and Ryan lying and manipulating and mooching off of them just continues. Now, Mackenzie's still all pissed off because, well, I don't think it really has anything to do with anyone calling Ryan on anything. I actually think it's because Dr. Drew singled her out for her ignorance. And Mackenzie doesn't want to be seen as losing to Macy in any way, shape, or form. And that's where her defense of Ryan's going to do what Ryan wants to do, and Macy's going to do what Macy wants to do, and I'm going to defend him until the cows come home. Well, I saw a few mirrors in your house, Mackenzie, so maybe take a peek and then check the time. Dr. Drew tries to clarify one more thing. Ryan, you said you're good with how things are with you and Bentley and Macy right now. Well, Ryan then nods yes, but then all of a sudden, Jen, Larry, Mackenzie, they all swoop in with a, no, we want it to get better. What he means is he doesn't want it to get worse. Yeah, that's what he means. Like Ryan's a kindergartner who needs mommy and daddy to speak for him because he's too shy for teacher. What the actual fuck? Finally, Ryan gets fidgety enough to bark out that he just wants to leave and get home and not have fights so he can see his son next weekend. And then Jen and Larry giggle and laugh and say, "Oh, see, he's a good boy. We told you he was." That to me, Larry reaching over and patting Ryan on the knee, it was one of the most infuriating scenes I've ever watched on Teen Mom because there are just so many levels and years upon years of dysfunction and intentionally hiding truths in this family. But we are not even close to being done with this family yet. Oh, no. Jen and Larry now stay on the stage and Macy and Taylor come out. Again, a grown man's parents speaking to his ex-girlfriend and her husband for him. Reeks of maturity and growth and commitment to make things better for Bentley, doesn't it, Mackenzie and Ryan? Now, Macy and Drew talk through this possibility of Mackenzie doing Ryan's urine test, and gee, we wish Mackenzie and Ryan were here to hear this. Macy, why do you think Ryan isn't willing to talk with you? Well, Macy could not have said it better. It's exactly what I said earlier. She said, "I think Ryan doesn't want to be put in a situation where he has to speak for himself. People around him answer questions for him." Ding, ding, ding. To be honest, I think Jen and Larry know that they do that. And I don't think they even give a crap anymore. I think they just want Mackenzie and Ryan to grow up a little bit, or a lot, and they want Macy to keep sending Bentley over because they love Bentley. They know that Macy is not going to enable or put up with Ryan. They're past that point. They know that she sees through it. They probably wish that they had the same backbone as her, but at the end of the day, they are going to keep it nice with Macy for the most part because they love Bentley and want to see him. Let's go ahead now and see what's up with Gary and Christina. I have said it before, but I can never tell if Gary is gaining or losing weight. I think it all depends on the proportions of the couch he's sitting on and how big of hat is sitting atop his big meatball of a head. Well, blah, blah, blah. Jody's not his dad. Christina's sad. Let's talk about Amber now. Gary starts out by saying, well, we all know Amber's choosing some duds. Oh, Gary. Even Dr. Drew closed his eyes and smirked. And you know I screenshotted it because I love that shit. It's as if Gary forgot he's sitting on that couch right now because he himself was one of those chosen milk duds. Well, Christina got a few minutes to share her feelings now on how things are going. I feel like until now, Christina's always been more of a side character. She may pipe in every once in a while, but she's never really gotten a full segment, as far as I can recall. She's just never gotten to dump all her grievances and proof out there. So she clears up all these things that Amber accused her of on Twitter, like that she didn't have custody of her daughter. There was some restraining order. She says all of it is false, except that whole story about her cheating on her ex-husband with Gary. Gary. What must this guy have been lacking to make Gary Shirley seem, pardon my language here, fuckable? Just think about that one. Now, at this point, Amber and Hagrid Skype in, and Amber starts to vent about how she's upset because Gary and Christina are always bashing her as a bad mom. Gary jumps in and stops her and says, it's not about you being a mom. It's about the people that you bring into your life and the choices that you're making. And as soon as Dr. Drew used Matt as an example of those, quote, bad choices, Amber now needs a hanky. Oh, here go hell come. Amber starts making her voice go shaky, and then she fans her face like as if she's drying her tears away. But there are no tears because she's faking. She turns this whole thing into a platform on depression and guilt. Gary's sitting there rolling his big old head around and his eyes and says, listen, that's not the issue. No one's holding you back from Leah. Come see her whenever you want. Hint, hint. And this is where Dr. Drew basically forces Amber to apologize to Christina. And it was just then that I was able to figure out what's going on with Amber's look. So she's touting this, I'm a type of person who can admit when I'm wrong. It clicked in my brain. Amber's new look. Okay. She looks like someone who would have recently escaped an FLDS group. Can we just call it a cult? Okay, we're going to call it a cult. She's a recently escaped FLDS teen, one that has the look and polygamous poof of a 40-something. She's got the hand-me-down glasses from 1994 and a nice floral blouse that was generously gifted from the church bazaar leftover bin. She just has so much potential and love for the Lord. God bless. All right, bye-bye. Next up, Tyler and Caitlin. There's some talk of Caitlin's constant guilt and how that can be really tough for Tyler because he can't always say how he feels because then it's going to upset Caitlin. Well, you know what else might upset Caitlin? Because it upsets me. Your loose scoop neck tee, Tyler, and that little pubic chin hair thing. But he really is a good guy, so I feel like we got to give him a pass on this. Whatever. Here's what we want to know. Do you still smoke pot, Tyler? Well, he got all butchy on us. He had some slick one-liners, nice clever avoidance. He really turned on the charm. Like father, like son. And I gotta tell ya, if you are not following Butch on Instagram, what the hell are you waiting for? It's worth signing up for Instagram if you don't have it. Just search Butch Baltierra and it comes up. The man is hilarious. He sings to you. He shows off his developing four-pack, six-pack. I don't know. I don't look that closely. I'm just interested in Butch's heart. But let's get back to the stage. Dr. Drew, genius that he is, he pulls an old love line trick and correctly diagnoses Tyler on the spot. He's bipolar. He's got some things to deal with, lots of ups and downs. Oh, speaking of, how's that relationship with Carly going? Well, they say things are good, but it starts to get a little shaky, like maybe some, we don't want to talk about it, a little uncomfort level here. And this is really where Drew works his magic and he makes things happy again. But look, guys, everyone's doing better. You, Butch, hopefully April. Whoa, stop. Hold up. I could not have been the only one that did a Scooby-Doo. Huh? There was some alluding that April is not doing okay. See something, say something, you guys. April, you've come so far. Don't you dare fail us. We need you. I'm sure Tierra Rain LLC needs you. But you know what we all need? A little FaceTime with Butch. Or should I say, Darl. New sobriety, new glasses, old name, but new teeth and a new little nugget of info that my heart didn't know it needed. God bless, Darl. God bless us, everyone. Now, fast forward and back from a commercial break, it's Deborah Danielson, EMBA, herself. Farrah isn't at the studio, but Deborah wanted to be there to talk about her wedding and wigs. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, talk about why her feelings were hurt that my Sophia wasn't there. And that Farrah didn't wear the blue dress she was supposed to wear. And she's sad because Farrah doesn't talk to her or her family. And she's fearful for Farrah's new, quote, scripted environment. Scripted porn. Ah, yes, Deborah. That is much more scary than improv porn. Yes, yes. I see now it's all coming together. Deborah never ceases to exploit herself as just as terrible a human being as Farrah is. To take a line from Little People, Big World, just in a different way. Well, Farrah's interview is actually done in a different way because Farrah is one-on-one with Dr. Drew in Los Angeles in a previously taped segment. Farrah looks like she is straight out of an 80s TV set whose contrast was set too high. She is radioactive colors. Her skin was glowing, not in a Princess Kate just hours after birth way. She is Gatorade Lemon Lime. God, this interview. Farrah is on the edge of a very steep cliff of anger and high anxiety. And we know this because she's doing that thing where she talks through gritted teeth and a perma smile, and she claps a lot when she's done with a sentence. We find out that Deborah made Farrah a lie detector test to prove if she loved her or not. Now, that is some shocking shit, but what's most shocking is that Farrah actually said yes and passed it. But today, I'm not talking about my mother. Thank you. Okay, so you mentioned going to therapy to work on things. Today, I'm not going to talk about therapy. Thank you for asking. You were recently dating stuntman. I'm not talking about anyone I've dated. Okay. Simon, can we talk about him? I'm not going to talk about anyone I've dated. Okay, can we talk about that blow up with Kristen? Well, I can tell you one thing. Make sure you avoid Farrah if your name is even close to Kristen. Christina, Crystal, just steer clear because at the mere mention of her name, Farrah starts applauding. She's doing the wave, a whole cheerleading routine because Morgan and Kristen, in her words, contrived her to be a disgusting person. Yeah, okay, Farrah, they just created holograms and rang up Pixar to make lifelike replicas of you and Sophia to stick in the episode to make us think things that aren't true. So at this point, Dr. Drew just goes back to something that he knows normally will pull Farrah back in. Okay, why don't you tell me about your businesses? I run multiple businesses. I create, I develop. I'm having so much fun as an entrepreneur. You guys, for someone who is such an entrepreneur, wouldn't this be your time to drop some names, some web addresses, where they are, what the names of them are? But she doesn't, because I still believe those stores are just covers for whatever it is that she earns money. This is just my opinion. God only knows what the Abraham-Danielson EMBA clan are capable of litigiously. But okay, let's just say, perhaps, in my opinion, just a little thought in my mind, perhaps she earns her money the same way yacht girls earn their money. You know, it's really nothing to be ashamed of, right? If it is true, this is just my speculation, but let's just say it is. It wouldn't be that shocking, considering Fair herself said that she is proud to say that Sophia knows of her, quote, social efforts in adult entertainment. Whoa, record scratch, hold on. What does that mean, social efforts in adult entertainment? Well, Dr. Drew, if you have any questions about that, my daughter knows what I do, so please just respect that. Honest to God, Farrah was more scary to watch during this interview than watching the movie Saw was to me. At least I knew someone was going to die or lose a limb, but I didn't know Farrah was just going to inflict psychological distress on the person interviewing her and the entire nation watching. What is going on behind closed doors? And I don't mean her back door, if you know what I mean. I mean, what is going on with her and her daughter? Now, this last little segment was just rehashing a lot of old questions, likely because Farrah wasn't answering anything Drew had planned to ask her. But my ears perked up when Farrah started lassoing in the LGBTQ community and saying how they support her and she's like them because this production was breaking her to her core. To take Mackenzie's words, excuse me, this production, you mean the one that paid you and gave you a life outside Council Bluffs, Iowa? You ungrateful, ugly soul. How are we supposed to feel badly for you about you feeling judged when you judge and abuse people for just doing their jobs? Oh, get ready for it, Farrah, just like you did with Kristen. Ooh. Ugh, I don't know how this man always sees such good in everyone or how he's able to overlook the craziness that is someone's life and personality. I'll have what Drew's having. Now remember, Teen Mom 2 starts Monday, May 7th, so mark your calendars and get ready to contact Leah with all your lip sense reorders, okay, y'all? All right, next up, last but not least, Married at First Sight. Here we are. Today is the day, decision day. Anything is possible. Well, the one thing that we know is possible is that the Jeftys really are the Jeftys now. Just hours, or maybe it was a day, before Decision Day episode airs, Shaunice shared on social media that she is pregnant. The only thing to say is, yay, congrats Shaunice and Jefty. That baby is going to be so stinking cute. And I think Shaunice is just going to be the cutest, most fun, super affectionate, gorgeous mom. So again, congrats to the happy parents-to-be. Hopefully we'll get to hear more about that next week on the reunion, but today we're here to focus on decision day. With 3 days left until the final day, Molly's at her mom's place and she says she's feeling numb and that it's going to take some time to process what went down with John and heal from the divorce, heal from the marriage that's fallen apart. Now, it's confusing to me if Molly is recognizing that she's being a little hypocritical in that while John took it personally that she wasn't attracted to him, she's also taking it personally that he wishes he weren't matched with her. I thought she was being self-aware about it and kind of admitting the irony of it, but I'm not so sure after I played it back. Maybe I'm just reading it wrong or I'm just being overly cynical either way, but what's your take on it? I get that she feels badly about it, like how it was so messy right there at the end, but I'm wondering if she was also just so blindsided by that confrontation with John and Dr. Jessica that now she's feeling like the victim. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it really could go either way. Over at the Jeff D's, Shaunice is talking things through with her mom on the phone and saying how she's feeling a little unsure of how Jeff D is feeling about staying married. And at the same time, Jeff D is talking with his friend Antonio, and this name, Antonio, oh, Antonio, has been making its way into the reality TV world between 90 Day Fiancé, Here Married at First Sight, Before the 90 Days. I mean, Tony from Sister Wives, like, that's pretty darn close, right? So anyway, where was I? Jeff D's only hesitation about staying married is that he isn't currently head over heels in love with Shaunice yet. And Shaunice told Jeff D she wasn't in love with him yet either. Now, neither of them, we know for a fact, are in love with that couch that's hiding beneath that ill-fitting slipcover. So at least they have that in common. Okay, let's check in with my new favorite person on the show, John's mother, Cheryl. I love a lady with a sporty walking stick and a down vest. I'm not even being sarcastic because I love a down vest. If I were a Barbie, my main outfit that would come with purchase would be a down vest, puffy, probably army olive green because that's like my go-to color. I would have a long sleeve shirt underneath. Throw a walking stick in there. I mean, why not? Let's live a little bit, Barbie. But back to Mother Cheryl. She's giving the best advice a mom can ever give. You just gotta give it all you got. You did your best. That's all you can ask for. Now, John still seems pretty upset with Molly as he talks about her walls going up. That's like the new catchphrase on every dating marriage show. Walls up, walls up, walls up. Well, when I think of walls, I think of a firewall. So let's check in with Ryan. Okay, I know like firefighters, like a firewall is not a thing, or maybe it is. I think it's just a computer thing, or maybe they got the phrase from firefighting. Okay, I probably should have thought about that before I just shot that out of my mouth. But anyway, let's go over to Ryan. First of all, I have to address the vertical blinds in the room. So Ryan is at his parents' house, and I shit you not, we had those exact same, it's like a rough chenille fabric vertical blinds. They were in our family room growing up, and it brought back so many memories of how I would pretend, I can't believe I'm admitting this, but you know, like the little pull cord thing that would be on the side, and there was a little rectangular box on the bottom. And I would grab that thing and I would pretend it was a remote control. Even back in the day, I had set my sights high on the future. So what I would do is, before we had a TV with an actual remote, I'd grab the plastic rectangular prism at the bottom and I would just point it at the TV so my neighbors would think I was just like some badass second grader with a magical high-tech remote control that was just happened to be strangely attached to the window. Ah, the good old days. You guys can relate, right? But back to Ryan and his adorable dad. I love Mother Cheryl, but I also love, I don't even know if we know his name. I'm just going to call him, we're going to call him Ralph. He just looks like a Ralph to me. Possibly a Larry or a Frank, but I'm just partial to Ralph. So Ralph and Ryan's mom, Noreen, sounds good, right? Don't you think? Whatever her name is, Ralph and Noreen. Well, they think Ryan needs to be patient and try to understand that Jackie is a woman and men and women go about things and communicate differently. So then in a voiceover, Ryan says that he's willing to fight for his marriage, but then he had this little twinge in his eye when his mom said that this relationship here is different than just having a girlfriend. So, oh, we're very doubtful. Meanwhile, Jackie is at the bar with her friend. The Countess Luann has lent Jackie some turquoise statement earrings. And Jackie and her friend, who looks like a Paris Hilton impersonator, they start talking about how Jackie needs to gain some more trust in Ryan. All of these small fights, daily arguments, it's making it really hard for her to trust what his intentions are. She's just really unsure about what his decision is going to be on decision day. Also sounded like Jackie loves Ralph and Noreen a little more than she likes Ryan these days. Now, over at Shawnee's, she has set up this super romantic backyard area. It's all Christmas lights and blankets and pillows. Really cute. Dr. Pepper says they're supposed to celebrate each other, I don't know, something. But what was so cool about this scene was that Jeffy and Shawnee's were, it was just really a genuine moment. They're truly laughing with each other. They're into each other. I think it's always a good sign if there are some inside jokes and playful banter. And in this case, it's this whole gifting of socks thing. But then later, boom, boom, shaboom, boom, he gets her some lingerie. And Shawnee's then buys them a star and names it the Jeffies. I actually sometimes wonder if that whole star purchasing thing is a scam, because how are they going to prove that someone else doesn't already have that star too? Or they could just like put a star on there and say, hey, it's yours. I mean, I like the idea. I think it's really cool, but I don't know, maybe before I knock it, I should look into it, because that would be pretty cool. But maybe if there's any of you that have a star, is it really provable? Like, is this really a thing, or is this some Amazon Prime deal Groupon of the week? All right, now over with Ryan and Jackie. Not going as well over there on this gifting celebration night. Jackie says Ryan went MIA the night before and the morning of, and she's needing some reassurance from him that they are on the same page. But Ryan just doesn't want to talk about it. He wants his chips and salsa and a margarita. Can't blame a man, but I think Jackie makes sense in what she's saying. Ryan seems either really hot and heavy into it, he's all in, or very standoffish. Like, there's no middle ground. But, you know, I'm that little fishy, and I'm hooked on you. What I pictured in that moment, the entire Lifetime audience viewing, is the scene in Stand By Me, the movie, in that pie-eating scene. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen it, just look into it. I'm just going to leave it there, because I don't know how many of you may be eating or may change your opinions about pies later. Now, let's get to decision day. Whew, Molly, you're a very cute girl, but you're not an American Girl doll. Take it easy on the curls and the mascara. Now, John actually looked better than he has before, but looks aside, John and Molly, anything you want to say to each other here? Molly apologizes that she didn't want to jump his bones, her words, and John says there's not much he can really say. So then Dr. Jessica asks, well, try to think of and share with each other something that you are grateful for after going through this experiment, despite you getting a divorce. Molly goes first and says that she's grateful that John was sincere in his reasons for being there. I disagree, but I mean, we got to take her word for it. She was in the relationship, and if she sensed during those nighttime conversations or conversations that were off camera that he was being sincere, let's give it to him. Well, John, he can't think of anything. He just regrets doing it altogether. He says he lost his job, he left his apartment. Now, this I do take an issue with. It's not Molly's fault that he left his job. That was his choice. Like, they hadn't even met each other yet at that point. So I don't think all of that guilt, or maybe I'm putting that word on him, I don't think that really lies on her shoulders. So Molly then looks to the experts like, are you seeing this bitterness, guys? Like, are you seeing why I'm not attracted to this? But the experts kind of just press on, and then it was just so weird, because they go from that super tense moment where they're just staring daggers at each other, and then they start laughing about Harry Potter spells, and before we know it, they're making Molly, and only Molly, answer the question, do you want to stay married to John if he wants to stay married? Now, I think it's only human to pick sides. So Dr. Jessica is definitely on John's side. And I think Cal and Dr. Pepper are just naively optimistic in both of them. But no, folks, Molly doesn't want to stay married to John. And of course, John doesn't want to stay married to Molly. No surprises there. Ryan and Jackie. Ooh, oh, Lordy, where do I start? Ryan. He just starts going on this very long-winded tangent about how he just needs to let Jackie vent and have her little, I forgot how he worded it, but basically, like, let her just have her little temper tantrums, and he's just going to be the person to stay calm, let her have her moment, listen to all her yapping about what she needs, blah, blah, blah. Now, Jackie's facial expressions said it all, at least said what I was thinking. Like, yikes, a bad choice of words, Ryan. So, Ryan, do you want to stay married to Jackie, or do you want a divorce? After some clever wording, which I'm sure producers tell them to kind of say and allude to, ooh, I'm going to say no, he ends up saying he chooses Jackie to be his wife, and he stares at her very, very closely and intensely. And then, Jackie, do you want to stay married, or do you want a divorce? Well, despite all the arguments and Ryan often not making sense and his star-spangled boxers, yes, Jackie wants to stay married. I think Dr. Pepper was actually the happiest person in that room, and I think it's because she got to drink champagne, and, I mean, let's face it, since Dr. Pepper is barely 4 feet tall, she probably gets a lot of kick out of that small glass of champagne. Now, Shaunice and Jeffy, the wild roller coaster ride of a couple. Jeffy sits down and expresses his fear of never falling in love with Shaunice. The possibility of never being head over heels in love with his wife really freaks him out. And of course, that hurts Shaunice. That would hurt anyone. But don't worry, girl. Jeffy says he thinks that you're made for each other, and he wants to stay married. And then drums, violins, cellos, crescendo. Shaunice, do you want to stay married or get a divorce? Cut to Shaunice. She's crying. She says she appreciates the expert's help and she's prayed about it, but commercial break. Somehow we come back. I never hear that but again. Maybe I just missed it. But she says that she believes in Jeffy and her together and they're going to be unstoppable. Pastor Cal is tearing up crying. Dr. Jessica only flinched because I think she was wearing so much leather that could have been caught in the crossfire of tears. She just wanted to stay out of it. And then Dr. Pepper was all too happy to pop open another bottle of bubbly. That a girl, Peps. Now, next week, we will all get to cry over that little moment between Jeffy and Shaunice as she shares the unveiling of her pregnancy. We saw it in the preview. Hopefully, it wasn't a pregnancy test with some French fries like Ryan and Mackenzie on Teen Mom. You know what? I'm going to renege that. Maybe I can just edit it out, but I got to apologize for that one because Shaunice doesn't deserve to be put in the same sentence as Ryan and Mackenzie. No. Sorry, world. Okay, well, that does it. Please remember to rate and leave a review on iTunes if you listen and love the show. Always appreciate it. Helps this little podcast going and growing. In between the shows, find all the fun everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at RealityBPod. And remember to set those DVRs for Teen Mom 2 coming up and 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After. It starts May 20th. Make sure you don't miss it. You know, 90 Day Fiancé, if you've been with me from the beginning, it's what inspired me to start this podcast, and it is my passion, my inspiration, and I'm already getting excited about being invigorated again from really the OG of reality TV. Until next week, talk to you soon. Stay salty.
At At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.